Well, I see a lot of old friends here, and I'm not talking to them tonight. I want to talk to the new people. They know all my stories. All my stories. I'm quite sure about this plan. Now, I first of all tell you how I came to tell stories and not talk about philosophy or anything else. In India, in the evening, we used to sit around Baba like this. And Baba would point to someone and say, tell a story. Or someone else, tell a story. He didn't give us very much in the way of discourses at this time, but he made us do the work. And we got to the end of our stories. We hadn't any. We had a few readers digest, and we got the stories out of that, but we really were getting in the middle, but still Baba went on. So then, one night, I had no story, and I said, I'll tell you a story I wrote when I was a little girl, and I told it to him. It was a very foolish thing to do, because he said, immediately, now, every night I'm going to give you the title of a story, and the next night, you have written the story, and you will tell the story to everybody. It's very customary in India, as you know, to sit around and tell stories. So for about a month or so, Baba gave me the most extraordinary titles for books, for stories. And there were very odd, some of them. And I had to tell a story. Now, I was able to do it because at that time I wasn't doing any of the housework or any of the things. I was watching the gate. I sat at the gate under a tree to stop anyone coming in who was coming in to disturb the ashram, or anyone who shouldn't come in, or anything like that. So I sat under this tree and made up stories. So that now the only thing I can do when I talk about Baba is to tell you stories about Baba, which I'm sure perhaps you'd like to hear. Now, to go back to the early days with Baba, right back to 1931, when he first came to England. He had a group of people, lots of them you've heard of. We were people who didn't know anything about anything much. It wasn't as it is nowadays. There are hundreds of books around about occult things and mysticism and so on and so on. There were some, but they weren't read. It just wasn't done. Some of us had done some Buddhism and some other things, but it wasn't as it is now. You've all had books about Baba, you've read about Baba. Baba was from us. We didn't know who Baba was, in a way. We were waiting and wondering about this person who was coming. And, of course, when he arrived and took us under his wing, he had a group of about not more than 7 or 8 at that time, and maybe... sometimes there were more added, but they seemed to drift away. So I thought I would tell you about... We went all over Europe with him. I mean, we'd stayed for so long in Lugano, so long in Paris, so long here, so long there. And he'd summon us at the most inconvenient time he could possibly find out, so that you couldn't possibly go, but you always went. Now, he went... one of the first lovely holidays we had with Bob. And I think perhaps it was the most beautiful time we ever had with him, because he was letting us down lightly. He was not giving us terrible disciplines. He was wooing us. We were being won. It didn't take much to win us, but he added some more on top of it. So you can imagine it was a big, big wooing. And we went to a place in Italy. It lies just away from Portofino, a place called Santa Margherita. And we all went. There were, I think, 11 of us. It was Kitty and Delia and Minta and people, I don't know if you've heard of all these early disciples, and Quentin Todd, who died, and 11 of us, anyway. And there, in this lovely, lovely place, you know Italy, some of you, this was by the sea, by the blue sea, and there were the trees, and there were the hills, and we wandered about the hills with Baba, and I must say it was the loveliest time we ever had with him. First of all, he wasn't stirring up much trouble. You could be in lovely places with Baba, but you couldn't be happy. Your poor ego was having such an awful time being brought up in service, where it didn't want to come, it preferred to stay where it was, that it wasn't like this time. There were very few crises. You know, we called them crises when he got up to the surface, and there was tears and weeping and threatened to be thrown out and all that kind of thing. And we used to wander about the hills with Baba, and it was very, very lovely. And one trip we took, perhaps you can see it, Baba corresponded with some of the very much younger photos, I think, than you have here. And he was about, I think he was 39. And he was young for 39, and moved like the wind. We had to run to keep up with him. I mean, he was so vital, so quick, and always his eyes were moving. We hired a wagonette. Do you know one of those carts that have seats to the side, and you go in and with two horses, and it called for us, this wagonette, and we trimmed it with white flowers all over. We trimmed the horse, we trimmed the driver, we trimmed the driver, we trimmed Baba, and it was like a whole caravan of flowers. And it was a wonderful day. I think someone had a small crisis when we were up in the mountains. We drove up into the mountains. But otherwise, it was a peaceful and lovely day, absolutely incredibly beautiful. Because Baba was beautiful, and the time was beautiful, and the white flowers were beautiful, and Italy was beautiful. And it was one of the most lovely days. I don't say it's one of the most fruitful days, might be. But anyway, we had with Baba. That was one little thing. Now, I had a charming adventure with Baba there. I am, as you perhaps you know, I teach dancing, and I was a dancer, and so on, so on, so on. Everybody except Delia and me had to go to the passport office or something. Something's wrong with their passports. So Delia and I were left in the garden of the hotel. Everybody else, by the way, had cleared out of the hotel. I don't think they could bear all of us swooping in there together and you know, running around after Baba. They left it marvelous. I don't know whether it wrecked the hotel, but they went to a small hotel anyway. And Delia and I were in the garden, and along comes Baba, all very worked up and perky. I think he just had an afternoon rest or something. I don't know, but he was really full of life. And he came along, and he held out his hands and saying, well, what should we do, sort of? So I said, now, I said this, I was not being fresh, because he'd said to us, you cannot come to my level, I will come to your level. And at that time, he was more of our friend in a way than our master. Do you understand? So I wasn't being fresh, and I said, well, let's forget the universe and enjoy ourselves. Show both hands, not just one to show. The Indian disciples, who were not used to, there were two of them, there was Chanji and Kapha, who were not used to this kind of treatment. They had a different training. They were used to the idea of masters. You all know about masters, we didn't. We just didn't know about them or how to behave to them. And they were not quite sure about this. They were not quite sure. However, Baba was sure, and he came, and he jumped on my back. My back's been the same since, I think. And I had to carry him round and around the garden. Well, it rather served me right. And he said, let's get on with this and have some fun. Still, it was wonderful to carry Baba. That was wonderful, but he wasn't as light as he looked. So then he said, he made the signs, which I didn't understand. He signed to Chanji, and he said, you must give me a dancing lesson. So I said, marvelous. So Chanji brought Baba by the hand to the dancing school for me to teach, and his name was Thomas. And so I showed him a step, which, believe me, I teach dancing, and I have dancers who could do this simple step with the elan and vitality that Papa did. It was just 1, 2, 3 hop sort of step, you know. And he took my hand and I took his hand and we went at a terrific pace around the garden as if we were flying. I assure you that I have never enjoyed dancing so much. It was as if we were flying, not as if we were dancing at all. He had this, well, if your mind isn't there, you know, in our sense, an ego, movement comes through. I wish I had a few pupils like that, who they all think too much. And it wrecks their dancing. It's one of the poor girls over there. She looks bad about it. But we had, it was something to see Paul fly around this garden, and I went with him hand in hand around. And the Indian disciples began to melt a little bit. They thought, well, perhaps it's all right. And they didn't try to dance, but I think they would have liked to. And then we did another step, and then finally all the others came back from the passport office, and that was the end of that. But that really was a lovely afternoon for me and for Delia. And Delia was, she was enjoying it no end. We had Baba all to ourselves, except for these two Indian disciples, but we didn't count at all. We didn't bother about them. They'd been in India with Baba, and that was our day. Now then, now, Baba was disciplining us in a way. You had to learn obedience from the beginning, and we didn't know how to be strictly obedient. I don't mean, say, oh, well, Baba said this, and perhaps if I did it this way, it would be better, because Baba would like it better. No, you did exactly what Baba said. Exactly. You didn't change it. And there was a young girl with us, and Baba gave someone in our group, not me, an order that she was never to be left alone on the beach. She was a rather troublesome girl. She was always wanting to stay on the beach, and we all wanted to go home to have our lunch or our tea or dinner or something. And one day, the person who was supposed to see after her left her. And the others all went back, and I was standing with this girl, and I thought, worked it out in my mind. I thought, well, I haven't got to look after this girl and stay with her. Baba didn't tell me I had to look after this girl and see. I'm going home. So I walked along the road, this white Italian road, and I reached it over the hotel, and there was Baba standing like this. He didn't say one word, and I turned around. Hey, not a word. I went right back. Stay there, let Nisha will go. So I went home to lunch. But I mean, he never mentioned it. He never said a word to me about it. On one or two occasions, he has. You have to learn sometimes to obey Baba without words. There was a thing that happened there in London, and that was, I think, first time he came over. Gandhi was there. Perhaps you know that Baba came over, first time he came over, I think, on the same boat with Gandhi. And Gandhi and Baba had talks on board because they'd both been to that same master, Uprasani, and so on. And Baba was going to see Gandhi in London. He was going to go to his hotel. And he said, I'll take Margaret with me and Meredith. And the Indian disciples were there, I've forgotten. So he said, come to a party. And you will come with me, and we could see Gandhi. So I went home, and regardless of cost, got myself up to come see Gandhiji, went back to the house where Baba was, and Baba didn't look at me. And the cab arrived, and he walked straight past me. And I knew, without Baba telling me, that I was not to go. I didn't attempt to go, and he didn't call me, and he never said another word about it. And he'd made such a fuss about it in the morning that I was to go. But there were times when somehow he conveyed some order to you like that. Well, that was one, so I never saw Gandhi. I would love to, of course, because he'd come over to London with a goat and white, and a lot of fuss about it in the press. Well, another thing that happened in this lovely place where we were having this wonderful holiday. Now, this was trouble for someone, but it wasn't trouble for me. We had with us someone who was, you know all about your sanskars, they're good and they're bad. the most difficult ones to get rid of, let me tell you, are your good ones, because you don't want to part with them. You're rather pleased when you've lost the bad one, you know, well, this is, we're getting on. But if you are have to discipline yourself so that you have to lose your good samskaras, that's not easy. It's more difficult. And we had someone with us who had been, well, I would say too good, who'd spent a life of goodness and kindness, but it had got rather tiresome. You know? Well, do you know that kind of person? You meet them in certain religious communities. They have rules. And this person very much wanted to fit Baba into two patterns. He was very worried about him, about him fitting in either of them. One, his greatest ideal, I think, was an English bishop. And Baba somehow never fitted anywhere near this English bishop. But this man, let me tell you, did love Baba. This is only some kind of intellectual pride that, I mean, that we all have to go through and get rid of. And what was the other thing he did? Oh, I know, he'd done a lot of work for the poor, giving up his own career at Oxford in order that the money might go to the poor, and all sorts of things like that. Well, it had affected him adversely in that he was priding himself on this. You see the danger. It wasn't that he seemed spiritually proud, but he did not think much of the rest of us in that way. He was never nasty, he was a darling. But that was there, and we felt it a little bit. And so one afternoon, Baba announced that we were all to go to a place called Rapallo. It was not very far from Santa Margarita. And we got there, and to our surprise, Baba, who was not extravagant in any way, walked into the most expensive tea shop in Rapallo and ordered, well, a tea that no one could ever eat. He hadn't had to eat for a week. He ordered tea, iced tea, coffee, iced coffee, cake, toast, brew. You've never seen that. We were surprised. Well, we didn't care. But the one who cared was the one who had done all the good works with Baba, for other people. And he got fidgety. And he couldn't eat anything. And Baba got more and more hosty, like, hanging around everything, and we all got jollier and jollier. We were not so good. And well, you seem to be where we were not. And finally, this was too much for this person, and it was like the Pharisees when in the Bible. Do you remember when this woman came and poured spikenard ointment over Christ's feet, and she said, "But there are the poor. This money should have been spent," she said, "that should have been spent for the poor, the Pharisees." So this person said, "But Baba, there are so many poor people in the world, and look what we're doing, and you're doing." Well, Baba was sweet. Baba sort of shrugged his shoulders and said, "Oh, yes, you know, never mind." He wouldn't take it seriously. But then the joke of the whole thing was, when the bill came, he handed it to the I don't know if it broke anything down in him, but he certainly had something to think about. Baba, to break you down was often, he'd save you by being funny. You know, he'd break you down by humour, but sometimes, and very, very rarely, thank goodness, because it's an appalling experience, he'd break you down by humiliation. But Baba was so compassionate, he seldom did that. But I had one experience, so we won't talk about that. it really is a terrible experience. But this was humour, and I think for the moment this poor business was broken. That we're going to find it in its right place in the centre on the golden mean, and not break up whole lives about it in that way. And the same person also got caught. There was a lovely tent on the beach. It was really a beauty. It was satin. It looked as if it belonged to some very wealthy Italians. It's a beautiful temple. And we went for a walk one afternoon with Baba along the beach. And Baba pointed to the tent, you know, it signified how lovely, what a beautiful tent. And then he was pleased with the idea, and he opened the door of the tent, and we went in, and we sat down on the cushions in his tent, all over the tent. And this upset that person. He again said, "But Baba, this is not a thing that any English gentleman would do." What English gentleman, Baba? And Baba pointed round, what was this all about? So he left the tent. He went away, this person. And the owners of the tent came along and were charmed with Baba and said, "Please sit in our tent whenever you like. And never mind about being an English gentleman." But you know, I mean, when Baba looked at anyone with those eyes, anyone would fall. These people just fell and said, "Please sit here. We're so happy to have you here." But this made a difficulty. We walked along the beach after that, and this person was sitting on the rocks, sulking just a little bit. And at the back of us, looking over the cliff, came a man full of charm, and a middle-aged man, and made signs to us. He didn't speak. And then he went away. And Baba said, "That is the man, that is exactly like the man, a must, that this person who was talking should have, is going to meet in Moscow, when he goes to Moscow, and now he won't know him." And there was a flare about that. This poor person really got into trouble. But Baba really, that was a little bit the humiliation, that one. But this, always trying to get Baba to fit into a pattern, just didn't do. Baba's in no pattern. And if he was, we'd notice it. We stayed there for 2 or 3 weeks. The only other thing was that there was a woman who tried to become a disciple. And Baba was picking only a few at that time. As I said, there were only 11 of us there. And this poor woman was determined to be a close disciple. And Baba was equally determined that she wasn't going to be. And she sold her grand piano and came to Italy. But poor thing, Baba sent her back after 2 days. She did become a follower, but she never could understand why he didn't take her with the ones he was taking around with him. But that, I often think of that grand piano and wonder what she did without it, because that was a terrible sacrifice for her. She was not a well-off woman. Well, when we'd stayed there for about 2 or 3 weeks, Baba went with Quentin Todd and two of the men disciples. He went to Assisi. You may have read about it in The God Man. And they went to see all the places belonging to St. Francis, and Baba did some things. But I don't know exactly what did happen. It was all very mysterious when they came back. It's all in The God Man, though. Read about it. So after that, Baba was going back to India via Venice. He was going to catch a boat there. And so he said, "We'd all go to Venice." And we all went to Venice. We traveled first class, and we slept on floors and on our luggage and all sorts of things. But finally we got to Venice. And it was really very lovely there in Venice too. Baba was stirring up a little more trouble than he was in Portofino. And he stirred up some trouble. He said we'd go out to the Lido for the day, or for the morning. So we got on this little steamboat and chugged up to the Lido. And it was lovely being with Baba anyway. The Lido was closed, there were not many people there. And then 3 or 4 of the very lively ones decided they wanted to have a swim. Now, with Baba, you see, we hadn't learned how to behave with Baba. You don't leave Baba and go for a swim unless Baba tells you to. But they didn't know that we hadn't learned to be disciples. We were learning. We learned the hard way. And so I think 4 of them, must be more, several of them went swimming. They got swimming clothes and they went swimming. And Veer and I didn't want to go swimming. We sat with Baba and the two men disciples. And then Baba seemed to get very angry and said, how could his disciples leave him and go swimming? There's such a thing as swimming. Didn't they love him more than swimming? And he got up and we went back on the next steamer to Venice, leaving these swimmers swimming around. And they didn't know where Baba had gone when they came up. Well, when we got back to Venice, Baba sent again for Delia and me and said the West was no good. Why had he come to the West? He didn't want Western disciples. None of us were any good. And he went carried on like this for quite a time. Delia and I were crying and crying and crying. And Delia, it was very funny, Delia suddenly remembered that she had £100 in England. She said, Baba, I've got £100 in England. Will you take it? And, I mean, we were both in an awful state about this whole thing because we had it all. The others were out swimming and we were in trouble. Then about an hour later, in came the others full of, you know, their cheeks were glowing. They'd been swimming and they brought flowers to Baba and in they came. And Baba welcomed them with love and kissed them and took the flowers and never said one word to them. Dina and I just sat and looked. It was evidently something Baba wanted to do, and that was a very tragic thing to happen. I never knew whether Dina gave him the £100 or not. That's an unfinished story. Then we went round, we had an evening that was so lovely. Again, it was something that you can't imagine. We went out on the lagoon at night with Baba in two boats. Can you imagine? And with Baba and the lagoon and the men singing and the... It was not a dark night, but it wasn't a moonlight night. And that was a lovely, lovely night that we had with Baba out on the lagoon. There were moments that were very beautiful, and somehow they're more beautiful when you remember them afterwards, but that was very lovely. Then Baba had some curious connection with the St. Mark's Cathedral. He counted all the pillars. He made us count one night, and he took us down there, and we had to count all the pillars round, that surrounded, short ones. And there were 120. He said, and then he counted the domes on top. There were he said, this represents an avatar circle, 120 people. The four domes on top, they were, at the time, he said, the English group, the American group, and an Indian group, and some other, and the men Indian group, the women Indian group, and the Indian. He said, these are my circle. He did count a lot of other things. At the time we finished running around St. Mark's, counting all these things, it rather went out of our minds as to what he had said about it. But we only knew that St. Mark's represented the circle of an avatar. You've read about the circle in the discourses, have you? Well, you can read about it if you want to. And then of course there were all these photos taken there of Baba and all of us with pigeons all over it. Do you know St. Mark's Square of St. Mark's? Pigeons, full of pigeons. And sitting on Baba and sitting on us and that, and then Baba went back to India. And that was the end of that particular trip, which was a very nice trip. Now, I don't know when I'm supposed to stop. I've told you the trip. Either we stop, or I go on, or you ask me questions about things, and I see if I can tell you any stories about things you want to know. Any questions? John?
They could take advantage of this break and keep in the aisle and move forward.
Yes, they could.
There's room up front so that more people can come in. In fact, we're quite clear the aisle so that people can come up there if you move forward.
it was an accident. I think a great many people have had this question of an accident with Baba. This was in 1931. And my life was in a mess. A mess. I'd all my life looked for something like Baba. Looked and looked and looked and found nothing. I got mixed up with theosophy and this and that. Nothing. Nothing. And then everything in my life broke. As I said, I'm a dancer. And at that time, the great impresario died, Diaghilev. Anna Pavlova died. This was just in the year before Baba came. The great Cecchetti died. My father died. My mother died. A man I was in love with died. And there I was. And, I mean, it was really black. Black. That was just before Baba came. And I was going down to judge a competition, a dancing competition in South of England. And on the station, I met one of the most peculiar women I've ever knew. And she came up to me and she said, Margaret, where are you going, dear? I'm going to judge a competition at Hastings. And she said, Hastings. And she looked all sentimental and broken down. She said, it's where I spent my honeymoon. And I've never been able to afford to go back. I said, well, listen, Dorothea, they're paying me a large sum to go down and judge these awful people. And if you like, I'll pay a fare down, you come with me. So Dorothea came with me. She had veils that flew behind and many, many necklaces, more than you modern people had, more. She did you right in the eye. She had many necklaces. And she rattled when she walked. And we got on the train, and I said to her, Dorothea, do you know anywhere I could go for Easter? I said, I don't want to go away with my friends. I just want to go away to the country. She said, oh, yes, dear. There's a man down in Devonshire. He has a very nice farmhouse by the name of Meredith Starr. You've all heard of Meredith Starr, have you? He was Baba's link with the West. You should hear about him someday. And I'll tell you one day. And you should go down there, and you'll have a wonderful rest. So the morning I was going down to Devonshire, I was on the station at Waterloo, and my friends had come to see me off. I was off for this quiet rest, and onto the station ran this woman. She ran. The train was just going out. Her veils were flying and her chains were rattling. And she said, Margaret, I forgot to tell you, dear. You have to meditate 4 hours a day. And so I went off in the train to hear about my master. And the first thing I saw on the wall of this farmhouse was a picture of Baba. And I went across the room. I didn't shake hands with anyone. I was very rude. I said, who's that? You see, he caught me at once with the picture. So it was true, we did have to meditate 4 hours a day, which I was not very good. But Meredith said, you may meditate on Meher Baba. And he didn't tell us much about Baba, except he said, you must come here every holiday you have. You see, I had a holiday every 3 months. I had a school in London, dancing ballet school. And you must come here on all your holidays and meditate. You are not fit to meet Meher Baba. Mm-hmm. So I said, oh, well, all right. And since I wasn't fit to meet Meher Baba, I went down there in the summer holidays. But, as usual, Baba's time sense was extraordinary, and he didn't come in 3 years, he came in 3 months. And so when he came to London, he came to Cliffy's house, and we were to meet him there. This man that Meredith had organized people to come and see him and so on. And I was left, some of them went to the station to meet, some of them had gone to Marseille to meet Baba. He came overland, and some of them had gone to the station to meet Baba, but I was left in charge of a completely strange house, a large old London house. There I was in this house, and very, very mixed up about this, what was coming. You see, what was coming? This we heard about. And the telephone rang, I answered it, and Herbert David, his brother, his voice was ecstatic. He said, "You can't, don't leave the house tonight, stay in the house. There's something coming, you can't believe what's coming." And he said, then he said, "But he sent you a message. And this is my first order from my master." And the order was, as usual, an extraordinary, peculiar one. It was, "Go around the house and close every door you see that's open. And then open the front door yourself." So I went around this perfectly strange house. I did not know the Davies well. And every door I found open, I closed. I had voices inside. They must have gone Well, I even went down to the basement, because London houses had those basements for the kitchen. I went down there and closed the cook in the kitchen. And went out to the front door and opened the door. And there, at the foot of the steps, because it was a house with steps running up to the front door. I don't know, you've probably seen these houses in London, probably got them here too. But they were old-fashioned houses, and there was Bala standing at the foot of the stairs. And he looked, I don't know what it was, but he looked very small. He wasn't. And he had on a pink turban and a white sadra, and it was a very cold day. He was not warmly clad, and it wasn't good. And he had on a coat. But and it was the end of September, you see. And in September, England is very cold. I can tell you, the winds come across that North Sea terribly. He walked up the steps, and he walked past me, and he looked at me as he passed, and he went straight upstairs to the top of the house. The Davies had lent him the nurseries. I don't know if you know about the last generation before last, the big generation gap. Children were brought up in nurseries at the top of the house with a nurse, and they were out of the way, and they were brought down after dinner perhaps to have a sweet, and then they were sent back to the nursery. And their mothers did go and see them, but not that. Well, all the Davies were grown up, and the Davies lent the nurseries. I think there were four or five small rooms up there for Baba and whoever he brought with him. And so Baba went up, passed me on the stairs, and he went up. And there were a few other people there, and it was as if your mind had gone a kind of blank. You didn't know what had happened, really. It was something you didn't quite believe, and you didn't know what was going to happen. And then Meredith Starr came down, and he said, "Meher Baba would like to speak to you." And I got nervous. I said, "Well, wouldn't someone else like to go first?" And Meredith said, "Meher Baba would like to speak to you." So I went up. And he sat me down opposite to him. He sat here and sat me in front, and he looked. And then he let me look at his eyes. And I can't tell you, because I can't explain what it was. But it's as if I saw the whole world there. I don't mean I saw the whole world, but I saw the depth of everything there was in Baba's eyes for that 1.5 minute. And of course that was the end of me. Whatever he wanted after that was all right. But he just for that moment looked at my eyes, and I looked, and that's what I saw. But I can't tell you what I saw. You know, these things are not explainable. You cannot explain. Is that all right? That's what I came to
know. Tell us the dog story.
What dog story?
The
dog that bit me? Well, that's all about Baba too. Well, don't tell Elizabeth Patterson I told you, because she says I tell black stories. And this is a black story for me, anyway. How that started. That's a long story. If it's too long, you can stop me. In India, you know, in those days when the British Raj and the troops were being mauled over India, the soldiers used to leave their poor dogs. You know, they were moved from Lahore to Ceylon, and they left their dogs behind. And a lot of them were starving about the place. They'd come around the kitchens and the houses and try to get something to eat. And we arrived at a house in Lahore, and with all other houses we'd been allowed to feed the dogs. Baba said, "No dog are to be fed." But the one person in the world who always was never crossed by Baba was Mera. You know that, don't you? She was trained quite differently from us. We were crossed all the time, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that. But everything that Mera, she was trained the other way. Baba told us about it. She said, oh, Baba, there's such a nice black dog in the garden. She said, couldn't we have this dog? And so Baba never refused to anything. And Baba said, yes, but Margaret must bathe the dog. Now, I didn't like the look of this dog very much, but the point was, Baba said I was to bathe the dog. So I said, well, Baba, will you allow me to feed this dog for 2 days before I bathe it? Because there I was with a dreadful-looking dog, enormous dog, and I was told to bathe it. So for 2 days I fed it, and then I did manage to bathe it. Now, there are two dogs involved in this. Baba went away to Kashmir to see some must, and before he went away, he did something that he never did. He called me and said, while I'm away, I want you, for once, to obey Mera as if I were here. Well, I said, of course. I didn't know what was going to happen. So, everything went all right, and Mera didn't give me any orders, and she didn't say anything, until a new dog appeared on the scene. A little brown dog had a hole in his neck like that. We didn't know anything about mad dogs. Any of us. We didn't know anything as far as I could see. And Mary said, sent to me and said, Margaret, there's another dog. Will you bathe it? So remembering my orders, I said, yes. And I bathed this dog and I put something in this neck. I didn't realize that it was a bite from another dog. Bob came back. And this little brown dog, the second dog, talking about the second dog, the whole snake, came round with his eyes crossed and his legs turned in and every sign of rabies. He came round and tried to drink from our water and then he had fits. And so Baba said, so-and-so must go and catch that dog and take it away. And so-and-so said, if that's a mad dog, I'm not going to. So Baba said, well, Margaret must. Poor Margaret, I don't know why I got mixed up in this mad dog affair, but I put on some slacks and some covered my hands and my arms and everything except just my eyes, because I was a dog. I'd be all right. I was covered. And I went out, and I was joined by Milu, Dr. Nilkant, you know, the Baba's doctor who died some years ago. And we got the dog out, and Nilkant got it on a chain and took it to So I went outside the front gate, gave the dog the milk, because that's the thing that brings up the paroxysm. He at once went into a fit, rushed at me and bit me here and on the knee. And it sobered down. I went inside, bleeding, and to my surprise, I didn't know Baba was in the house, there was Baba standing. And he said, the dog's bitten you. And I said, yes, the dog's bitten me. And Baba said, then they all said the dog was mad. And Baba said, well, we're not certain. Now, then this is where Baba really gave me a bad time. That night, he came with Nilu, the doctor, and two of the other Mandali, and sat outside the bedroom window that I was, the room that I was sharing with Rano. And they got a medical book and read everything about rabies and hydrophobia out loud out of this book. And I lay there like this. This was a dog. I mean, this was something. So the next day I thought I was going to be bustled off to have injections. And no injections. Nobody did anything about me. And there I was stuck with this bite. And I think it was 2 days later, Baba said, Nilu says you've got to have injections. because you've been bitten by a mad dog. And you're supposed to have it in you within so many hours. But you see, Baba, these were the days when Baba, this was years after these lovely days in Italy, he'd really got down to working on us. And so Nilu took me into a pathologist in Lahore, and the pathologist was mad. He was mad. He said, how dare you not bring this person in here, and for Nilu to know what to say. And all the rest of the mandali were there, all the men, they all came in, and finally, I got one of the injections. You have 14, you know, and they're all in the abdomen. It's very pleasant. And you get one a day for so long. And when I went back home, this man, the pathologist, the man he had already told the pathologist all about Baba. And so he was curious, and he said, I'll come and give them the rest of the injections at the house. And so he came, and he fell for Baba, of course. He followed Baba. But then Baba said, first of all, my glands were swollen here, and they were swollen on the arms, they were swollen in the groin, and I was a mess, a real mess. And Baba sent for me, said, I hear you're not very well. I think, what's that? So I didn't say anything, I really was fed up with this stuff. He said, now I'm going to give you a treat. Oh, well, Baba's treats at this point, not more, not. So he said, I'm going to let you have some jam for breakfast. Well, I hadn't seen any jam for about 5 years, and if it hadn't been for the dog bite, I should have loved jam for breakfast, but I couldn't eat. I was all swollen up. And he said, and I want you to take every night, I've never heard of it as a cure for rabies, 2 Carter's little liver pills. Every night, 2 Carter's little pills. You know, I mean, really, when Baba gets going, you're so muddled you don't know what you're doing when you're tying us all up in knots about these things. So, the next thing was, Baba was beaming with pleasure. He'd arranged a treat for us. And the treat was that we had to go on the bus to the Lahore Museum and the Lahore Zoo, which was 7 miles from the Lahore Museum, and 7 miles away was the Parsi burial ground. And we were going to have a trip from one to the other on the hottest afternoon I think ever existed. It must have been about 115. And I looked, and there I was, all swollen up, and I thought, I wonder if I dare ask if I must stay at home. So I took my courage in both hands, and I went to Baba, and I said, Baba, I really don't feel awfully well. Do you think I could stay at home? And Baba said, put out his hands, and he looked pathetic. I mean, my heart was wrung. And he said, and I've arranged, he spelled on the board, and I've arranged a treat for you. So I had to go. But I must say, the only thing I remember about this whole afternoon was we saw a lovely white peacock. I didn't even go into the Parsi burial ground. I thought, let the Parsis get buried. Otherwise, if I go in the Parsi burial ground, I'd probably stay there. But what I got out of this, if you have your injections late, it lasts for 6 months. If you have them at once, it's all over in 10 days, the danger. If you have it, within certain time, but this was the latest they could possibly have given it to them, it lasted 6 months. So what Baba did was, and this is where I was very lucky, we went back to Mehrabad after leaving Lahore, and he said, Margaret's life is in danger, so she cannot leave me. So whenever he went off with the girls, I went too. And the rest, there was terrible jealousy. You can imagine in the ashram about anything, anyone getting a little extra from Baba, someone got a pack from Baba like that, and the rest of the and do you know what I mean? But I was to go with Baba and the girls. They couldn't say a word because of the mad dog. So the mad dog gave me time, and for some months I was with Baba and the girls. We went to Aurangabad and we went to other places, and I just stayed with them. I was ill all the time. I mean, this esophagus was inflamed all the time. Well, that's the story of the mad dog.
Baba, why don't you tell us the story about Meredith's dog?
You want to know about Meredith? Oh, Well, Meredith's story was, it was a strange one. He had, I'll have to go back to Meredith's birth really to make it reasonable. He was the son of some diplomat, and his mother wanted him to be a saint. Very dangerous. She said, the child I'm bearing is going to be a saint. And so every day she had a picture in front of her of St. John the Divine. She meditated for hours on St. John the Divine, and finally Meredith appeared. When Meredith got herself in a mess, instead of finding that at once, he got into the hands of people who were mixed up with black magic. They had the black mass, and they, you know, killed goats and cats and all these things. If you have, this man's books apparently have come up again, but they're dreadful books. A man called Aleister Crowley, have you ever heard of him? No. Well, he followed Aleister Crowley, and he was rescued. Meredith was rescued from Aleister Crowley by a man who'd been in India. And when Baba sent Rustam, Adi's brother, you've heard of Rustam, have you? Adi. Well, Rustam had a very wonderful brother, very tall, very handsome. His eyes shone. He looked like a perfect master, but he wasn't. So they say it, but he looked like one. He was wonderful looking. Baba sent him to England to find Baba, and Baba wasn't having any. And sort of all the time sending Meredith aside. But Meredith didn't give up. Meredith didn't give up easily. He was a very determined man. And let me tell you that everything in the West came through Meredith. He was the link. They always had a link, apparently. But he was the link, because people came from America. And Meredith knew people in America, and it all went through in the first time that went through Meredith's little farmhouse, came here and went to other places. Meredith was his link, but he broke with Baba because of pride. He wrote Baba a funny letter just before he left Baba. I was telling you, it was a marvelous letter. He got to the state when he'd made up his mind to leave. But he wrote to Baba and he said, Dear Mahabala, either you give me £400 B illumination. You know what an illumination is worth now. £400 or illumination, or I leave you. He sent his ultimatum to Baba. And Baba threw his hands and again. Revival said the West, you know, Mr. Bob, the West is going to go to Ireland, and the West is the disciples of all this. But we stayed on. Well,
the time about the meditation and the sugar. Do you remember the meditation at Mary's place with the father?
Oh, that was sweet. Yes. Mary just ordered everybody to meditate. Why do you want to meditate when Baba said, because he's the only meditation. It's one of the greatest meditations, to meditate on the personal form of the master. Baba was there, and Meredith came and made shut some of us up in a room, and some sat in the garden meditating, and Baba comes along, very, very friendly, very full of life, smiling away, and he came into the room when we were meditating and broke it all up. And he said, we started to have some fun. And then we went to look out of the window, and there was a man there, a man named Quentin Todd, sitting. He hadn't got a shirt on because it was a sunny afternoon. He was sitting there trying to meditate. He wasn't very good in the morning, I swear, because we hadn't been trained. It's a training to really do meditation properly. And Baba pointed to him, and then he pointed to a sugar bowl, and he took some sugar and he threw it at me. Quentin went. Baba enjoyed this more than anyone. I think he threw three pieces, and finally Quentin was very annoyed and turned around and saw Baba. And Meredith wasn't pleased about it. I think Mary did not understand that being with a master is the greatest meditation. You can't take your mind open. You can take your mind off Baba. If you're in a room with him or anywhere near him, you just could not take your mind open or your eyes. Well, there you are. Short story. Are they getting late?
No more questions.
What happened to the sugar?
We're going to have some sugar now. We're going to have a little celebration tonight, knowing that it's the birthday of Margaret and Johnny, different days, so we celebrate today.